Topic number 7, using spiritual strategies beyond isolation and fearfulness. When is isolation or fearfulness a problem? We know from psychological literature and classification of isolation as a personality disorder, we have names for that disorder called schizoid personality disorder, that isolation as a disorder is classified as an enduring pattern of inner experience and behavior that deviates markedly from the expectation of the individual's culture. Now, it's important to recognize that there is difficulty in labeling this inner experience and behavior across different cultures and families and racial and ethnic differences. I know from personal experience, growing up in an Italian family, that our sense of isolation is different, looks different than what it might be in other cultures and families. And so in any of these personality issues or disorders, we have to take into consideration, and I will try in the course of these talks to make specific reference to how culture may influence this labeling. The situation for Italians, which constitute my family, the expression of inner experience and behavior does deviate markedly from cultural norms that might be appropriate, let's say, for Irish families. I remember, for example, the first time when I was a novice that I went into a wake for one of the other novices, an Irish American, whose father died. We walked into the wake and there were people there who were kind of in a celebratory mode. The casket was closed. People were talking to each other as if we were at a cocktail party. And there was laughter and there were jokes and there was the expression of kind of humor. And I was shocked by this expression. I had never witnessed anything like this before, because in my culture, when you walk into a wake, the experience is of the body being prominently displayed, casket is open, people are weeping and wailing and screaming, and there's all kinds of demonstrations of grief that are there. And so to see this at an Irish wake for me was shocking and horrifying, and because it differed markedly from my culture. But that doesn't mean that the Irish people there had a personality disorder, because they were responding that way to the death of a loved one. And neither does it mean in my culture that this reaction constitutes a personality disorder among us as a group because we respond in that way. No, it simply underscores the fact that different racial and ethnic groups, different cultures, and different families will define those expectations and those norms that we use to apply to individuals. So this is a very important point as I'm talking about personality problems and personality disorders, that we have to remember that personalities are never individual exclusively, but that they always belong to a cultural context. And so when we have tried to evaluate the problematic personalities, we always have to remember that they are an interaction of culture with individual traits. And we'll try to keep that in mind as we go through and enumerate some of the other characteristics of personality problems in the context of this talk, the isolated and fearful personalities. The second characteristic of fearfulness as a problem disorder is in terms of pervasive and inflexible symptoms. All of us, for example, have times when we prefer to be alone, when we don't want the company of other people, when we are more or less guarded in our availability to others, and this does not constitute a problem, but rather a normal mode of being. And yet when the mode is pervasive and inflexible, so that a person is resistant to change and chooses isolation over availability to others on as a regular pattern, then this is something to take a look at. The onset of fearfulness or isolation as a problem can happen as early as adolescence or early adulthood. And it seems to be the result of an interaction of various factors. One is temperament. All of us genetically are loaded with one or another temperamental style. Some of us by temperament are happy. That is, we come into the world with a broad smile, easy to please and soothe. These are the children that everyone likes to be around, and it's a pleasure to have their company. Others of us, however, are born with a shy temperament. These are people who are more tentative about the environment, more likely to withdraw, not call attention to themselves, and as a result, the world is not terribly excited about the shy child. And then there is the colic temperament, the child who comes into the world angry, irritable, difficult to soothe. And a person with this temperament evokes responses of avoidance from people in the environment. And of course, these temperamental styles set us up for one or another style of interpersonal relating throughout our lives. Other influences include parental and peer interactions, as well as teacher expectations, physical appearance, and the like. These features are stable over time. And so impulsivity, for example, that may be associated with one or another personality style that is problematic, is something that is generated early in life by people who tend to be more sensation-seeking. And it may wane with age, but it generally remains stable from about 16 years old on. And these personality features can lead to distress or impairment. There is a notorious lack of insight in people with personality disorders. People frequently blame other people and come into treatment only because they are referred by others, usually a spouse or an employer who will send them to treatment, not because they see that they have a problem, but because they're so difficult in social and occupational settings. Now, what are some of the symptoms of people with isolated, problematic interpersonal styles? One, distorted cognitions or thoughts, ways of perceiving and interpreting themselves and others and events as threatening or restrictive or punitive. Secondly, disturbances in affectivity, where they may experience emotions too intensely or perhaps not at all intensely. Or there may be a certain lability where mood ascends and descends when the person feels like it's out of their control. The appropriateness of their emotional response is often in question. I had a friend who had borderline personality disorder, and whenever small events would occur, like jeans would be stained or something would happen at a lunch appointment, for example, he would really not be able to carry through on the lunch event or get accomplished what was before him because he'd be so distracted and so emotionally distraught by the event. Interpersonal functioning, of course, is interfered with people with personality disorders and all kinds of problems with impulse control. That is about personality issues broadly speaking. Let me focus now specifically on the isolated or the loner personality. The loner personality, the schizoid in diagnostic nomenclature, is characterized by a pervasive pattern of detachment from social relationships and a restricted range of expression of emotions in interpersonal settings. Loner personalities tend to prefer mathematical or abstract tasks. Now, this is not to say that everyone who chooses these kinds of careers is an isolated or schizoid personality, but that people who have this kind of aversion to interpersonal relations frequently are drawn to these kinds of professions. They have no close friends or confidants, except possibly for a first-degree relative. They present with a remarkable absence of solid peer relationships, frequently as children in the skins of men and women. They are indifferent to the approval or criticism of others, and they may have particular difficulty expressing anger, even when provoked. This kind of bland emotionality characterizes the isolated or schizoid personality. Allow me to address now the fearful personality by way of description before we proceed into spiritual ingredients for change for both of these types of personalities. The fearful personality, called diagnostically the paranoid personality, has a pervasive distrust and suspiciousness of others, suspecting that others are exploiting, harming, or deceiving him or her. This person will frequently be preoccupied with unjustified doubts about the loyalty of friends or associates, and reluctant, therefore, to confide in others because of a fear that that information will be used against her or him. This person reads hidden, threatening meanings, even into benign remarks, jokes, persistently bears grudges, and is unwilling to forgive the insults, injuries, or slights that they think they have received. Fearful personalities are pathologically jealous. In sum, these are cold, combative, suspicious people with an excessive need for self-sufficiency and frequently involved in legal disputes. What are the spiritual ingredients for change for people who have both either isolated or fearful personalities? The core problem, of course, for both schizoid and paranoid personalities is isolation. In both cases, there is a perceived vulnerability in interpersonal interactions. As I quoted earlier in a talk, Sherry Turkle, professor at MIT in Science, Technology, and Society, talked about the fear of intimacy and the widespread feelings of emptiness, of disconnection, of the unreality of the self, and the allure of the computer, where one can be a loner but never alone. She writes, "You can interact, but need never feel vulnerable to another person." That's quite a commentary on our use of the computer as an avoidance mechanism. The spiritual ingredients for change are two. One overall goal is to heighten appropriate self-awareness, because loners are unaware of their own self, their feelings, their thoughts, their needs. And paranoids, by contrast, are too aware of others. Secondly, to promote the communication of feelings. Now, note that while these two goals, these two change strategies, are especially useful for schizoids and paranoids, they of course have application to each one of us. For schizoids, for loners, that is, the challenge is greater because there is no awareness. To heighten this self-awareness, a journal might be particularly useful. It's the best place to start for a loner because you're safe. No one will judge, abandon, or criticize you. Write down your thoughts and feelings on a daily basis to promote that kind of self-monitoring. Validate yourself, because self-awareness must precede connection with others. The motivation for the loner must at first be self-serving. Pennebaker, the researcher from California who has done many studies on the benefits of writing down feelings in terms of health and well-being, has illustrated that writing feelings improves physical health, enhances immune function, reduces cardiovascular reactivity, and may even prolong life. So the use of the journal can be a very important tool. Secondly, meditation. Again, essentially having a self-serving motive for the isolated personality. When you focus your awareness in meditation, you gain more power. That is, you improve the concentration. And you enjoy your senses more fully by way of a heightened awareness of whatever you're doing. St. Ignatius Loyola used rules for eating in the context of the spiritual exercises to promote and foster an awareness of the presence of God in each of the gestures of eating. It's kind of akin to what the Zen tradition teaches us about mindfulness in all of the activities, eating, playing, working, relating, to do things more purposefully and intentionally as an antidote to the numbness and distraction that often characterizes the emotional experience of the isolated personality. When your mind quiets down, allowing the experience of an inner sense of peace and joy and well-being, you may, in the process, over time, become more aware of the transcendent interconnectedness that exists, the communal grace, in other terms, that binds us to others and that motivates a reaching out beyond the walled-in self. Self-disclosure, communicating feelings, may grow, and you may be more inclined to be aware of others and to be less suspicious of others. Practicing communicating feelings is an important task, but one that does indeed require practice. The basic psychological insight into differential effects of communicating different thoughts and feelings is expressed in the work of Dean Ornish in Love and Survival, a book that he wrote in 1998. Try this exercise. Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. Get comfortable. Center yourself. Pay attention to how you feel when I say what I am about to express. I think you're wrong, and I think you're a jerk. Okay, open your eyes. How did that feel? Notice all the feelings and sensations that you experienced in that moment. Attacked, judged, angry, upset. The most common response to these feelings, of course, is to withdraw or to counterattack. Now close your eyes again. Take a deep breath. Get comfortable. Center yourself. Pay attention to how you feel when I say what I am about to express. I feel angry. I feel upset. Okay, open your eyes again. Was it the same or different? Notice all the feelings and sensations that you experienced in that moment. Was your heart more open? We can't argue with feelings. They are true. These kinds of feelings usually draw us in. And this is very important for people struggling with isolation and fearfulness. Practice forgiveness. Forgiveness does not condone or excuse someone from their actions in hurting you. Rather, it helps empower and free you from the pain of chronic anger. This is especially important for the paranoid or fearful personality. I'll say more on the effects of forgiveness in a later talk. Confession. Now, for paranoid, fearful personalities who are suspicious of others, recognize this, that our hostile feelings toward others are frequently a projection of our own feelings toward that side of ourselves that we reject, that we wish were not there. When I see someone else as stupid or close-minded or arrogant or whatever label I may put on them, and then I have such a viscerally strong reaction against them, it is frequently because this is one aspect of myself that I wish to disown and berate. But of course, it's more tolerable to do that to someone else than to myself. Confession allows me to look inside and to own those disowned aspects of myself long enough not to shame myself with them, but to bring them to the light of confession, to bring them to the light of God in the presence of a priest, and to allow God's light and God's compassion to show me that there is another way to deal with these traits in a person, not by rejection, not by anger and hostility or shaming, but by a radical acceptance and compassion for me. That is an extension of the very compassion of God.